lost Kathy, I lost a huge part of myself. And now I'm back to where I was before Kathy, just basically a fairly lonely person, because I'm a pretty private person when it comes to things that I want to talk about. I'm much more comfortable here in front of a microphone talking to however many people than I am with, even with a small group of friends. I'm very nervous, so you've seen me how I get like that sometimes. But I really have conquered that part of my fear, and these people are still living in that. I mean, that's why they try to grab every possession that they can, because they're basically afraid that if they don't do it to someone else, someone will do it to them. You know, and once you get into that attitude, it's very difficult to break out of it. And you're right, they use fear as a manipulator. And I see this at work in people who are afraid to lose their jobs because they're afraid of the consequences of it. And you know, having lost so many jobs, I don't have a fear of that anymore. So I'm freer at work than a lot of other people are. I'm freer to speak my mind. But I see people put up with the most outrageous stuff simply because they're afraid of, you know, being on the outside. Because, my God, in this country, not having a job, not having something to do, oh, my God, that's a horrible, awful thing. You know, I find myself, I'm busier when I'm not working sometimes than I am when I am working, because I got my radio show and I got the blog and I do this and that. I'm not idle. I don't think there's anything wrong with being idle, so long as you're not idle for too long. You know, I think everybody needs a time when they need to sit down. But these people in the workplace, they're lived by fear. And a lot of them, if they're the Republicans, they let Bush rule them by fear.
Well, yeah, the only thing I think the Republicans are afraid of is not enough fear in the world. You know, they really are making fear of their main product, fear of war and killing.
They have to have an enemy.
It's their main products. But often, if you are afraid of something, you absolutely create the very thing you're afraid of by your fear. And so I think people really out there, they need to start thinking in more positive ways. They need to have a better sense of humor, start laughing at these fools. And visualizing a peaceful, beautiful world, visualizing other people in power. Just, you know, don't buy into all of this fear. It's a downward spiral. You will create what you're afraid of. So go run in the opposite direction. Run to the light. Run to happiness. Run to laughter. Run to positive things. Do not go and live on the dark side.
Well, fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death that leads to bigger deaths. Frank Herbert wrote that. Yeah. And that's the way I am, you know. And I say that we've only got about a minute or so left here. So, and I say that to all my working people out there. If you don't like your job, if you don't like your boss, if your job is making you miserable, if you're to the point...
Due to a failure of the Verizon Frame Relay system in our West Virginia studios, tonight's programs on the Head On Radio Network will be repeats of previous week's shows. We apologize for the inconvenience. Have a great evening.
Mug of dust with the cream of steam. How many more does that leave? Give me a pot of scotch. Heat up a pan of Stan. Throw in a handful of dicks. That'll do. Retreat to the carafe of mash upon a tray of ray. I'll lick a spoon of sugar.
Head On Radio News. I'm Bob Kincaid. Diplomacy? Who needs diplomacy? On Saturday, former Israeli Prime Minister Shimon Peres said Iran's president is, quote, of Satan, not God, unquote. Peres was responding to equally hateful remarks from Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who called Israel, quote, a dying tree. More ominously for mothers' children all over the U.S., Peres also said that Ahmadinejad will end up like Saddam Hussein. Another mother's son died in George Bush's war against Iraq on Saturday. The U.S. Marine died in what the Pentagon termed a motor vehicle accident. He was part of the Marines' first logistic group. The death was not the result of enemy action. In Baghdad Saturday, four other human beings died in the burgeoning civil war that plagues the city's streets. 18 others were wounded in the car bomb attack on Palestine Street. George Bush's death toll also leaped in Afghanistan. Afghan sources said Saturday that 41 Taliban fighters were killed, as well as six members of the Afghan police, in a shootout in Kandahar province on Friday. A former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff ran to the defense of his former boss on Saturday. Retired General Richard Myers, himself partially responsible for the mess in Iraq, said Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld is doing a good job. Myers said members of the military should never criticize Rumsfeld. Last week, a group of retired generals and admirals called for Rumsfeld to resign. They contended his incompetence is getting Americans killed. Speaking of retired military men, Pope Benedict XVI, a former Nazi anti-aircraft gunner, began his first Easter celebration Saturday in Rome. At the start of the service, Benedict carved the first and last letters of the Greek alphabet, Alpha and Omega, into a candle, as well as carving the numbers for 2006. Benedict's message had something to do with grabbing a hold of the risen Lord. If there were any questions about the Bush administration's commitment to citizens along the Gulf Coast, some of them were answered last week. The federal government announced it may not spend the money needed to raise all the levees protecting low-lying areas in the Gulf Coast region. The decision may make it impossible for residents to obtain insurance coverage. This is News on the Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, have you got a minute? I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady?
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The man ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha!
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
The United States isn't in bad enough shape to satisfy George Bush. On Saturday, Bush called for Congress to make his economy-crippling tax cuts permanent. In his weekly radio address, Bush repeated the same old line about how the tax cuts create jobs. He also claimed that letting the tax cuts expire, as they were designed to do, amounts to what he called raising taxes. Bush is, of course, the first president in history to try to wage offensive war and cut taxes at the same time. Trial will open on the day after Easter, that being Monday, for a Catholic priest accused of murdering a nun. Father Gerald Robinson is accused of stabbing Sister Mary Paul 72 times, as well as strangling her. The murder took place in a hospital chapel in Toledo in 1980. Prosecutors say Robinson performed some sort of ritual or ceremony along with the murder. Nepalese police cracked down on protesters again on Saturday. the security forces beat journalists who were protesting the Nepalese monarch's crackdown on free speech. Journalists and working people are calling for a general strike to demand the removal of the king. That prompted the royal attacks on the Nepalese people. And if it bleeds, it leads, even for the Weather Channel. A Weather Channel crew was arrested in Warren County, Tennessee, this past week when they refused to leave the property of a woman who had been killed in the spate of killer tornadoes there. The crew was charged with trespassing. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bob Kincaid.
Welcome aboard 4th Estate Radio. This week, it's almost Easter for you guys. It's Easter here. My name's John Fox in Sydney, Australia. And over on the other side of the planet, not in North Carolina this week, but off in California, is Bruce Birch. How you going, buddy?
I'm doing great, John. How are you doing tonight, man?
You know, it was a little dicey there as we were getting connected. And I'm glad that we made it in time, because I think we're going to have an interesting program this evening.
I think we're all going to have an interesting program. And, you know, I just want to tell you, man, flying out here to California today was a fantastic experience. You want me to share some of that with you, John?
Yeah, please do. Please do. Please do.
Well, you know, I got up to the airports. You know, I had mentioned last week that I was flying out and I was going to be doing the show from out here this week. And one of the things that I had mentioned on the radio show was the fact that I was kind of concerned about the Homeland Security thing and, you know, being on the spy list. And what ended up happening was I get up to the airport screener desk there at 5:30 this morning, you know, and there's nobody there, right? I mean, there's like one guy.
Oh, really?
And me. And I'm thinking this could be a good thing. I could get right through and get on that. And then I thought, wait a minute, there's only one guy and me. That means that he could really make my life a living hell.
Right.
But what he did was, you know, I mentioned to him that I had radio broadcasting equipment, and he said, really? And I said, yeah, I do political talk radio, and he rushed me through out of his way. So that was great. And then, John, I had, I spent half the flight from Chicago to California covered in 7-Up. So.
Well, how did that happen?
Well, to be quite honest with you, this wonderful lady, you know, it was very hot on the airplane. You know, they didn't have the AC up very much, and so she poured her ice cold 7-Up on me. I watched her drink about 5 screwdrivers, and then she decided to throw a drink on me. I don't know what it was.
do you reckon she was a conservative and she could just smell the progressive?
It's quite possible. It's quite possible. I wasn't even wearing patchouli.
Oh, right. And just before you go on, I just got to, you know, it's, you know, the kind of like a big holiday weekend in a lot of faiths, you know, whether it's Easter, blah, 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 whatever. And I hope everybody's having a good time. And those of you that are observing the fertility festival, you know what to do.
The fertility festival?
Well, that was like the pagan. You know, the Easter was just put over the fertility festival. You know,
oh,
that whole.
I didn't hear about this.
Oh. Gail and I are kind of checking it all out. You know how. Oh, well, you know, we'll be checking that out later, but that's too much information for the broadcast. anyway,
the fertility festival, huh?
Well, it
has its roots in paganism, and paganism is that's like Satanists, right?
Well, that's what some people would like you to believe, but other people think that it's, you know, there are those of us maybe that believe that maybe it's a bit more, I don't know, not quite so scary, and maybe has some better groundings than some other religions that take up a lot of airtime.
Any religion that promotes Easter bunnies crapping chocolate eggs to me is just wrong. It's just freaking wrong. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, absolutely. But you know, I don't want to go off on too much of a tangent there because we've got heaps to do. And I'm glad to know that just throwing out "Hi, I do political talk radio" ended up hopefully being something that evaded you some difficulty and got you to your first off-the-flight bevy a little quicker than if you had not said such a thing.
Well, you know, one would think that was the case. I really don't know. I mean, you know, the guy might have been, it might have been break time for all I know. You know, 5:30 in the morning, I'm serious, there was like me and two other people in the entire freaking airport, right? there was the guy sweeping the floor, and then there's the TSA guy, you know, he's like,
right.
He's got his little playboy over there. And
I'm curious about how that would all go, you know, in this modern day. And, there's been a lot of stuff this week, you know.
How much stuff, John?
It just kind of goes on and on and on and on and on. But
wait a minute.
What?
Where are we chatting, John?
Ah! Man, we haven't done any housekeeping yet. I was still getting my head around the fact that we got connected before launch, and that you're in California. You know, you're actually closer to me than you've ever been.
And my heart's all a flutter.
Woo! Anyway, we are, as usual, chatting at the Head On Radio Network chat room. And you just head on over to the headonradionetwork.com website, click on the chat room link. There's a quick little registration. You can dive straight into the pool. We got a bunch of good friends over there that, you know, chat about us, make fun of us, and keep us in line. And we're being streamed on the White Rose Society. Thank you, Ben Birch. His fundraiser has exceeded his goal. However, that doesn't mean that when you have an extra $5-$10 that you don't need, that you couldn't use it. So I'm glad that everybody dug deep and got him over his quota, as shall we say, that he wanted to hit. The show is being produced at the Head On Radio Network flagship studios in West Virginia by Bob and Agnes Kincaid. I don't even know where to start, but later in the show, you have a guest, don't you?
I certainly do.
Will have a guest, but you're the guy who nabbed him.
Well, you know, I was talking with a friend of mine the other day, John, and I think we came to the conclusion that I am that the guest gods love me. Because I tried to get Kurt Vonnegut. He did send his best wishes and listened to one of our shows and is behind us 100%. But his health precludes him from being on our radio program.
Right.
Maybe sometime in the near future. But tonight, later on after the 12 o'clock hour on the East Coast, 10 o'clock. I'm sorry, 9 o'clock on the West Coast. I don't even know what the hell time. I mean, dude. I went ahead in time, and now I'm feeling like I'm going back in time. I just, you know, I'm just a time traveler. Anyway, we will have David Rovics on the radio program later on this evening. David is a singer-songwriter. You can check out his music at davidrovics.com. Amazing musician, amazing songwriter, writes songs about peace and justice and progressive politics. So we will have him on later on the program. He will actually be leaving a concert and will be calling right in right as soon as the show is over.
Oh.
So it should be an interesting time.
Right on. And you CC'd me a bit of the email exchange you had, and I loved his little line that he had in the email, something about, you know, thanks for using my stuff, and feel free to use any of the rest of it, and don't worry about any money because it's all copylefted.
That's some of that commie stuff, isn't it?
Well, it all depends on how you feel about commie. Anyway, we're about 2 minutes from hitting our first break, and aside from that, what I kind of thought that we'd do after we talk about a few things here and there will be we want to open up the phone lines. There's been a lot of talk and whatnot about this Loose Change film that's been going around, which kind of takes very much issue with the official line on what happened to what happened on 9/11. And Gail and I watched this thing last night, and I know you watched it. And I'm thinking that a little bit later in the show, we're going to open up the phone lines and 1-877-4 head on. We want to talk about how everybody feels about, do you believe the government line? And if not, what do you think happened? If you don't...
I think it was the Easter Bunny.
Hey, man.
Okay, I'll be quiet.
Well, you know, if you look at some things, you know, and you look at the tape where supposedly, you know, Osama took responsibility, sure doesn't look like any of the other five Osamas that we've seen in video. And, you know, it might as well be the Easter Bunny. You know, it might as well be aliens. And a little bit later, I'm also going to play some audio from the film V for Vendetta, which Gail and I went to see this weekend. And I'll tell you what, leave it to a comic book to just show you what can happen. And I reckon that this is a brilliant, brilliant film. Great ride. I mean, even if you're just into comic books.
You're talking about V for Vendetta, right?
V for Vendetta. What a fantastic film. And this basically shows, a government gone completely corrupt. And it takes place in the future, and they actually refer to the former United States being in civil war. And this only takes place, a few decades in our future, and the UK or Britain is now the supreme power on the planet. And it's very, very interesting. Anyway, I'm hearing some music. So, Bruce, we got to take a break. We're blogging at headonradionetwork.com and fourthestateradio.com. We're going to be back in just a few minutes to talk about stuff and take your calls and everything else. So we'll see you on the other side of this break.
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
Oh, it's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path, one that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. Or go to peacecorps.gov.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. They say it's from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote. And then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored, hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. And when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of manicanism, and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper, and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight manicanism.
Protect yourself from manicanism. Log on to fightmanicanism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
You're back on Fourth Estate Radio. This is Bruce Birch, my buddy pal, John Fox, down under over there. John, how far are you away from the Harbor Bridge?
About, 10, 15 kilometers or something. About 10
exactly
miles.
Exactly what, thank you. I was going to say, what's a kilometer? I never heard of that before. We were talking before we went to the break. We were talking about all kinds of things, but we were talking about the whole 9/11 kerfluffle.
Yes. Yes, and I'll tell you
that word up.
Yeah, kerfluffle. Now, did you have a direction that you were going to head, that you're going to bounce off to there, Bruce?
No, John, because you know I think you have plenty of directions to bounce off into. I think my job is to serve as the bounced. Or bouncer, maybe bouncy.
Okay, well, I'll tell you. I was watching Loose Change last night, and it seemed to me to be a more in-depth, better version of In Plain Sight, which was, you know, a pretty low-budget thing, but it was just saying, you know, here's a bunch of footage that you saw on that day. What do you reckon? And, you know, there's lots of talk about a lot of different things. But the thing that really, really, really has me asking some serious, serious questions, man, on the footage in that film that they obviously spent a whole lot of time cleaning up, there is that whole aspect of those small controlled explosions just a few floors below the collapsing points of each of the Twin Towers. And you can see where, and the fact that it's not that it just happened once. It happens over and over and over as the building collapses.
Okay.
And you know, when I first see it, I go, okay, there's, you know, some sort of pressure thing, you know, via the elevator, you know, shaft or something, and so it's blown out that window. But then, in one of the bits of footage, you're seeing one of the towers from, like, corner on. And you watch on two sides simultaneously windows blow out on adjacent corner windows that look like something was detonated on the floor back, you know, say, you know, a few meters either direction. You can just see, like, from one point, two windows on two adjacent sides just blew straight out. And it's so controlled, and you watch it, that it's all of a sudden a few floors down as it continues to go, and bang, the same thing's happened underneath there. And, you know, I'd like to deal in facts and science, you know, and Ben Birch has started many a kerfuffle, you know, over at Democratic Underground, because he looks at the physics and whatnot, and he'll take issue with some of the things that I'm saying right here. And we've talked about it at length, because my thing is that I don't have any answers, but we still haven't had an honest investigation into what went on anyway, you know. And as far as that film seems, this most recent film seems to say, is that there are like 9 of the hijackers that are like alive and well and back home doing their regular gigs.
That's a lot of assertions there, John. What kind of evidence do you have to back any of that up?
Well, okay, there's you know, one of the things that we're told to believe is that because of the fuel fire, we were able to take a steel core building down due to the fact of, you know, getting enough heat to start the process, and then the whole thing came down on itself, where some of Ben's math that he's thrown out absolutely backs up that if you were able to start the process of paraphrasing and remembering back to this thread, you know, I think it was, you know, if this process had started, then there would be friction-related heat as the thing came down. Now, the problem that I have is the steel that built that building was tested to withstand many, many hours at over 2,000 degrees. And that type of kerosene fire will hardly break 1,000. And in the second, in the tower that was hit second, most of that fuel was expended outside the building in a huge cloud. So pulling all that in, what they're telling me, to me, doesn't add up at all. Now, I might have a bit better time believing it, maybe, even if I forgive the melting temperature of the steel, you know, that, you know, okay, if it was hit really, really straight on and the entirety of the fuel load actually burned inside the building, I may have a little bit more ability to believe the government line. Okay? And like I'm saying, I don't have the answers, right? But seriously, I have more and more questions as time goes on. I have less and less answers because we're not getting a straight story. We never have gotten a straight story. And as we know, during the 9/11 investigations that went on, Bush, Cheney, all these people, and remember, Bush's brother was the head of security at the Twin Towers up until 9/11. It worries me, man. So anyway, we're gonna pick this up on the other side of the break, Bruce, and see where we go with this. And we're taking your calls at 1-877-4 head on. And this is John Fox. Bruce Birch is in California.
He's the granola Ayatollah of canola. Charles Ford, founder of Grasoline Solutions, explains.
I just started writing rhymes while I was farming and doing the eco thing, so that's kind of how this all came about.
Ford spits the truth.
Now, Rudolph Diesel was no weasel, this we know to be true. He was an engineer and a humanitarian, too. He made it possible for us to drive on vegetable fuel. Nobody told him that, well, that's what I'm trying to do. It was back around the turn of last century when Dr. Diesel offered up this opportunity. Corn, soy, chicken, fat, some flour, flax, hemp, seed. Farmers could grow their own fuel. Not only their feed, small towns can be self-sufficient about their energy needs without drilling or spilling or paying a fee. It's like that.
Biodiesel reduces cancer-causing emissions by 75%. For more eco-wrap and all the 411 on biodiesel,
Grasoline.com. Check us out.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Cliff Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
Lots of experts talk about the ways that schools should inspire students to be creative. How you doing? I'm John Prime. They say that helping young minds tap their creativity is just as important as mastering math or their English skills. And of course, all parents love to experience the joy of seeing and hearing something their child has created. Well, one of the best places creativity is actively encouraged is in music class. There you'll find kids working out a phrase in a choir part, learning technical stuff such as fingerings on an instrument, or even composing and arranging music on computers. Music classrooms are bursting with creative energy, just waiting to be explored by young minds. So don't let it go to waste. Support your school music program. Thank you.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of six U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, this is just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Introducing Pablo Escobar, trained at the School of the Americas. Another day making hay up in Hollywood. Execution of the main informant, fighting FBI and law enforcement. Another day in the Colombian export trade.
You're back on Fourth Estate Radio. This is Bruce Birch, and that's my pal, my buddy, my friend, John Fox, Down Under. John, you still with us here?
G'day, mate.
Fantastic. Well, you know, I heard your argument. The whole situation with the windows exploding outward and the corners exploding, and then there was what was the other one? About the heat.
Well, yeah. I mean, what's the testing authority that handles these kind of things that actually accredited the steel? You know, they said that they do not see how the government line flows because there is no way that steel would have melted in those conditions. I mean, as far as they were concerned. It was nowhere even near, and we've seen buildings made of the same kind of steel
not
burn for hours, almost days, almost an entire day, and never come down.
Well, you know, in Loose Change, and I watched that video also, and in Loose Change it detailed, I think it was 20 different buildings that caught on fire. Each one of those buildings withstood the fires. Two of them were in fact identically designed to the World Trade Center and did not fall. But, there's a difference between having a fire and having a jet airplane crash into the building going 400 miles an hour. Don't you think there's
I do. Bruce, I definitely do. Okay. However, the Twin Towers were designed to take a pretty severe hit. And I don't remember if they were actually supposed to be able to withstand a hit like this. But if you just, you know, I, in my silly little world of being, you know, an audio engineer, most of my life dealt with physics, no matter how esoteric the end result was. You can't break the laws of physics. And there's a certain part of me that says, okay, if the plane had been hit, say, down at, say, the 40th floor, instead of way up in less than the last, 20% of the entire guts of the building?
Right.
Okay? So, and also the other thing is, if it had been from the explosion that set the thing happening, wouldn't you think then, when you've ever watched anything break, crumble, whatever, wouldn't you think that it would have been more like a hat tipping down and the top of the building actually coming more down the side, as opposed to the entire thing just seeming to crumble into a pile of dust? Because it was only hit on one side. Either building was only ever hit on one side, right? So that plane never made it to the other side, right? It never made it to actually break the structural integrity of the building somewhere near its center of gravity as far as central point. So I would see it would have to top to one side as it started to cave, because there would be more weight strain towards the side of the building where it was hit, because you'd have more integral strength, especially the one that was hit more in the corner, because you'd almost have a full triangle, which is the strongest geometric form there is, as the other half of that tower. And I mean, I've been watching this footage, and like I said, I can't go off and say that, you know, George Bush did this, because that would be ridiculous, because I have nothing to back it up with. However, I have a whole lot of connections to his interests and whatnot, and the fact that, you know, his dad was partying with Bin Laden on the very morning, and, you know, the fact that we had Saudis smoking cigars the same night with Bush as the smoke was still settling coming out of the towers. So, you know, I just really don't know, you know, what to do. But guess what, man? It looks like we have CB on the line. CB, you there?
Yes, I'm here. You're on my subject. I had to call.
I knew you'd ring.
I was about to say, wait, did you guys need to talk to me? Ask me all the questions you want. Yes, you cannot defy the laws of physics. No way would those buildings have come down that fast if it was the pancaking, they're saying. No way.
Okay, so you're seeing what I'm seeing, that, you know, you just follow, you know, if anyone who at least still grew up in a time where we actually had some science in the classroom, and
right.
even just touched on the beginnings of motion physics, that there's so much of this that I have to say something, it wasn't what they're saying it is.
Yeah, and even people that actually, they don't need an education in physics. Life is an education in physics. If the impact had done it, at least the top part of the building would have fallen over sideways, not down into its footprint.
Right.
The concrete being powderized the way it was is definite explosive, not pancaking. There would have been big chunks. There weren't very many big chunks. It was all powderized. People are getting sick from that god-awful. And the pyroclastic flow was just, it was really fast. It just went flying away from there with way too much speed.
And one thing that really bothers me, CB, why were the bodies dumped on a landfill? And why was all the debris just taken off and melted?
Right. That's against the law to take evidence away like that before it's been cleared, and it hadn't been cleared. There was no investigation into it. The three buildings had been closed down for some kind of security drills and stuff. In the couple of weeks before 9/11, the bomb sniffing dogs have been taken away. Marvin Bush, the president's brother, was in charge of security for the World Trade Center. I mean,
that's got to make you wonder.
Yeah, there are a million reasons to wonder, but the thing that I think is most illustrative is those buildings came down in just a hair over free fall speed, all three of them. You know. One, two,
hair
and seven.
Over what? Say that again, CB?
They came down in just a hair over free fall speed. In other words, if you'd have dropped a baseball off the top of the World Trade Center, it would have beat the World Trade Center down by less than a second. There's resistance. If weight is making it pancake down, there would be resistance at each floor. It would have taken radically longer than 10 seconds for them to fall. And free fall speed was 9.2 seconds.
But doesn't the weight, like exponentially become more powerful as it picks up?
Even
speed
it doesn't make it go faster than free fall, and when something is impeding it, even if it's only for a very short period of time, it would have, being really generous, it would have at least doubled the time for them to collapse. And that's
terminal
that's
velocity is terminal velocity.
What?
Terminal velocity is terminal velocity. You
right.
can't get any faster. Weight has nothing to do with it.
Right.
And any effect on it is only something that will slow it down or impede it.
Right.
So if it had been, as you're saying, Stevie, if it had been this pancake fall, it should have taken probably at least another good second or two.
Oh,
easy.
Easy. No, more like 60 seconds, you know. But cut that in half. Cut that in a quarter. You still don't
yeah.
come, you know. And there's another bit of information I just learned recently that's fairly interesting. There were like 16 survivors of the actual collapses, and they were, I think, in between the third floor and the 15th floor or something like that in one of the stairwells in one of the buildings. And they think the reason these guys actually survived is the charges did not go off in that section. And they ended up on top of the rubble as opposed to underneath it. And there was, you know, like 100 floors above them that came down, and yet they ended up on top of the rubble. That's another thing that absolutely says can't have been a pancake.
And the other thing, too, that and Bruce, you saw the film too. That really has me asking.
It's hard to refute that. I don't know that I can refute that.
Yeah.
Well, and here's the other thing too, Bruce, is that when the planes first hit and you still had actually, you know, emergency personnel going into the trade centers, there was damage and rubble in the lobbies. Okay. The planes hit way up there. Why is there going to be rubble down below unless there had been charges set off?
Plus all the people who report hearing the explosions and being and, you know, feeling the blast of the explosions. The people who survived that I just mentioned said there was an intense wind coming up the stairwell, not down it, but up it, when the collapse was happening. There's just overwhelming evidence that it did not come down like the 9/11 Commission report said. Underwriters Laboratories was the place you guys.
Thank you. That's who I couldn't think of earlier.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
And that guy got fired for telling
right
the truth.
Right after that.
He wrote a letter saying, "Wait, no way, Jose, could this happen to this steel?" And he got fired for it. So, the whole thing stinks to high heaven. And the physicists, there's this great organization that's getting bigger and bigger. The physicists and other scientists out there are joining together, and they've got they've got a page. Oh, what is it? ST911.org.
SP.
That's Scholars for Truth. Scholars for 9/11 Truth is what their name is. And it's just packed with articles, videos, you know, and anybody who watches or goes and looks at all this information on there can figure it out for themselves. They don't have to believe a word we're saying. They can just look at all the evidence. And it's overwhelming. You know, I tried very hard not to be a conspiracy theorist, but like we're given to saying now, the real conspiracy theory is that 19 guys with box cutters could have done that.
Still make it's kind of like, you know, the Easter Bunny is more plausible than
exactly
than what they're telling me.
And
like you said, all the witnesses that talked about explosions, the one of the bits of footage that I can never get out of my head is those three or four firefighters back in the station house, and the one guy's just going, "No, it was like a controlled demolition. Boom, 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 boom."
Well, we were also shocked while we were watching it, but, you know, everybody was saying, even as we were watching it, this is like a controlled demolition. Well, it's not like one.
Yeah.
It is one. Because all buildings that fall over or come down fall over. And I mean, that's why they have the controlled demolition thing, to keep it from doing that. They put strategically placed charges to make them drop into their own footprint.
And it minimized the damage to other buildings and whatnot.
Exactly.
They took out exactly what they wanted. And I mean, we're still talking about the Twin Towers. We haven't even started talking about the nonsense, as far as I'm concerned, is the explanation of the Pentagon.
Oh, I know. That one is
I've got a question, though. I have a question.
Okay.
I have a question. So someone sets charges in the World Trade Center, two of the largest buildings in the world. Okay.
Ten guys, 10 days.
10 guys, 10 days?
Yep. Some people say it would take 4,000.
10 guys, 10 days. And if they're working 8 hours a day to do it.
The building was closed down for all that time, you know, at nighttime. And also there was a very convenient electrical outage. So there was no, you know, pictures of what was going on inside that building. It would have taken, they say, either 10 guys, 10 days, or 10 guys at 40 pounds a pop. What? It would only take a few days to do it, and it wouldn't take any more than 10 men to do it. It could, and it, in fact, could have been fewer than 10.
Right. So, CB, we're about to come up on a break, but do you want to hold on through the break?
Sure, sure.
Okay, because I'm really glad that you were caller number one on this thing today. So I tell you what, why don't we go ahead and get into that break so we can come back and have as long a segment as possible with CB on the line and Bruce, myself, talking about 9/11 and whether you believe what they're telling you to believe. And so far, CB and I are on the same page, and Bruce, I think, is looking for something to counter with at the moment, but... Anyway, we're going to be back very, very shortly after this break with CB, John Fox, and Bruce on Portland State Radio.
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay. Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible, a cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
Head on. He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. Head on radio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Hit on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember him. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no oxycot. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts. The issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7.06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
Back on Fourth Estate Radio. This is Bruce Burke. My buddy John Fox is over there spinning tails. No, he's not. CB is on the line with us also. CB from California, one of our fantastic listeners. CB, I do have a question for you.
Okay.
You mentioned before we went into the break, you mentioned the fact that the building was shut down at night and that there were power outages. Is that correct? I mean, what was it? In what time period leading up to 9/11 was this?
It just in the weeks immediately preceding 9/11.
And Marvin Bush was the head of security for, or what was the,
yep.
What was the security company?
Oh, I can't remember the name of the company, but Marvin Bush was one of the directors of the company.
Okay.
And now when they
Straight after 9/11, did he not?
Well, yeah, because there was no World Trade Center left.
Well, yeah, but it all just seemed to kind of, you know.
Yes.
You never heard about it.
Yeah, we never heard about it. That isn't mentioned by the officials out there. There's just overwhelming evidence that it was an inside job. I mean, when you get over to the what we have on the Pentagon, that just defies description. I mean, at the time it happened, we were looking at the pictures. Everybody saw the pictures of it, and the hole was not big enough for that plane to have gone through there. And the roof had stayed on. There was like a 16.
The tail section would have at least messed with that in some way, shape, or form.
And yes, and the pristine lawn, there was no skidding and scrunching into the lawn, nothing. And they're saying that this fellow who could barely fly a plane at all could have done this fabulous maneuver into the side of the Pentagon. But doesn't matter because they're just physically, it cannot have been, what was it, a 757 that they said? It can't have been that.
I do believe. Now, CB, let me just cut in before we get moving completely on into the Pentagon.
Okay.
Now, there was one thing that we didn't even bring up about what happened in New York City. And it wasn't – I don't believe it was in the Loose Change film, but I do remember actually reporting this on our blog at the time, that the F-15 squad that usually reacts to planes that drop their transponders or go off course – to intercept and either force to communicate,
right,
land or shoot it down,
right,
that whole system had been actually shut down early that morning.
There was a drill going on. They were having a drill.
Right.
And a lot of them were confused, you know, when they were getting calls about it, you know, is this real world or is this a drill kind of thing? And no, you know, I mean, honestly, and there were a bunch of people who came the day before to do a drill for a terrorist attack, into the World Trade Center. And surprise, just so happens all these people are available on the day when it actually happened, you know, that they're having a drill. There were a bunch of drills, military and
What kind of confuses me, if they were actually having drills for the situation right then, don't you think that we would have had stuff in place that they could have dealt with it better than they did?
I thought they dealt with it pretty well.
Well, I mean, we didn't see...
The fire chief was up...
I have no qualms about local fire services and as far as emergency services. That's not what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about more aircraft control, that kind of thing, because they'd all be involved.
Yeah.
If there actually had been drills going on, and it just again it clouds the issue again. I have no statements to make about that, except for the fact that it just to me clouds the issue even just a little more.
Yeah. NORAD, almost all of NORAD's planes were elsewhere doing drills on this day. We could just go on forever and ever and.
I only wanted to, I noticed last night it was one of the only things that I hadn't heard rehashed in that Loose Change film that I've seen other places. Now, going back to where you were going when it came to, you know, the Pentagon, which we're about 2 minutes from hitting our top of the hour break, which we will have to take, but you were talking about the pristine lawn.
Right.
And that, to me, is just a huge telltale thing. And not only that, they only found one turbo engine rotor from what I saw.
Right.
And it didn't match anything like, you know, any plane that could possibly have hit it.
But it did match, a Tomahawk missile?
Yep.
Yep. And they won't release the tapes from the service station in the hotel nearby that would have shown what happened. They won't release them. They released four frames, and in those four frames, there's no evidence of an airplane. And if they wanted to prove to us that it was an airplane, a hijacked airplane, all they'd have to do is release those tapes. They won't.
And not only that, those four frames, if I'm not mistaken, when they were first released, had the wrong timestamp on them.
Oh, I didn't hear that, but I would doubt it.
In plain, if I'm not, I'll go back and check. I'll pull the DVD out, but in plain sight, I do believe. Okay, and I've just had it confirmed behind me by our local producer that when they first released those tapes, they had the wrong date, I think.
Great.
Which is even more curious.
Yeah.
So, CB, we're just about to come up on to the top of the hour break. Thanks so much for ringing in.
Hey,
it was
thanks.
Like ESP. I sent
thanks
it out to you.
Thanks for getting on my subject. Can I
tell you more about this? Put the link to whatever sites you have in the blog post at headonradionetwork.com, and people can go find it there.
Oh, that's a good idea. I will do that right after I get off the phone.
Right on. Our number one blogger, CB, ringing in. Thanks so much. And Bruce, sorry to... It's, you know, this is... It gets pretty complicated, don't it? I don't think so. Okay. You think it's all simple?
No, I don't think it gets complicated at all. And I know that we're about to go into a break, but you know, I've watched the same movies, John, and even though I am a skeptic, I will say this, and I'll give you this, and that is that there are enough holes in the story to drive several tractor trailer trucks through. You know, and not only that, but just, you know, the more questions that are raised, raises more questions.
Yeah, and this is exactly my point.
It's an exponential process, and we may never know the truth. However, what we do know is enough for us to I would say, warrant reopening the investigation.
Ah, yeah. How about actually having an investigation?
Oh, that's maybe we could do that. Let's have the first investigation, and then let's not have Lee Atwater... On the wasn't he on the panel?
I do believe, and my former governor, Mr. Keene, who I actually have a lot of respect for, I think felt like his hands were tied. But anyway, we're coming up on the top of the hour break. The news is coming next. You're with Bruce and John on Fourth Estate Radio. It's a couple minutes before the hour, and we'll see you right after the news.
Head On Radio News, I'm Bob Kincaid. Diplomacy? Who needs diplomacy? On Saturday, former Israeli Prime Minister Shimon Peres said Iran's president is, quote, of Satan, not God. Peres was responding to equally hateful remarks from Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who called Israel, quote, a dying tree. More ominously for mothers' children all over the U.S., Peres also said that Ahmadinejad will end up like Saddam Hussein. Another mother's son died in George Bush's war against Iraq Saturday. The U.S. Marine died in what the Pentagon termed a motor vehicle accident. He was part of the Marines' first logistic group. The death was not the result, the Pentagon said, of enemy action. In Baghdad Saturday, four other human beings died in the burgeoning civil war that plagues the city streets. 18 others were wounded in the car bomb attack on Palestine Street. George Bush's death toll also leaped in Afghanistan. Afghan sources said Saturday that 41 Taliban fighters were killed, as well as six members of the Afghan police in a shootout in Kandahar province on Friday. A former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff ran to the defense of his former boss Saturday. Retired General Richard Myers, himself partially responsible for the mess in Iraq, said Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld is doing a good job. Myers said members of the military shouldn't criticize Rumsfeld. Last week, a group of retired generals and admirals called for Rumsfeld to resign. They contend his incompetence is getting Americans killed. This is News on the Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Speaking of retired military men, Pope Benedict XVI, the former Nazi anti-aircraft gunner, began his first Easter celebration Saturday in Rome. At the start of the service, Benedict carved the first and last letters of the Greek alphabet, Alpha and Omega, on a candle, as well as carving the numbers for 2006. Benedict's message Saturday had something to do with grabbing Jesus. If there were any questions about the Bush administration's commitment to citizens along the Gulf Coast, some of them were answered in the past week. The federal government announced it may not spend the money needed to raise all the levees protecting low-lying areas in the Gulf Coast region. The decision may make it impossible for residents to obtain insurance coverage. The United States isn't in bad enough shape to satisfy George Bush. On Saturday, Bush called for Congress to make his economy-crippling tax cuts permanent, thereby causing further increase in the federal deficit, which is at record levels under his presidency. In his weekly radio address, Bush repeated the same old line about how the tax cuts create jobs. He also claimed that letting the cuts expire as they were designed to do amounts to raising taxes. Bush is, of course, the first president in the United States history to try to wage offensive war and cut taxes at the same time. Trial begins on the day after Easter for a Catholic priest accused of murdering a nun. Father Gerald Robinson is accused of stabbing Sister Mary Paul 72 times, as well as strangling her. She was 71 years old. The murder took place in a hospital chapel in Toledo in 1980. Prosecutors say Robinson performed some sort of ritual or ceremony along with the murder. Nepalese police cracked down on protesters again Saturday. The security forces beat journalists who were protesting the Nepalese monarch's crackdown on free speech and democracy. Journalists and working people are calling for a general strike to demand the removal of the king. That prompted the royal attacks on the Nepalese people. And finally, if it bleeds, it leads. Even for the Weather Channel. A Weather Channel crew was arrested in Warren County, Tennessee this past week when they refused to leave the property of a woman who had been killed in the spate of killer twisters that struck there. The crew was charged with trespassing. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. It's the big hour, too, and we're having our 9/11 open mic night. Bruce Birch, you still there? What was that?
Yeah, I'm still here, man.
You all right?
I'm choking on the truth, baby.
Or at least choking on the questions around what's definitely not the truth.
So what? Like what you said, John, let me ask you this. Oh, wait. Stop. If what you're proposing is actually the truth, if what you're saying is what we're thinking it is, what then, John? I mean, let's say for instance that every bit of this is absolutely true, that Marvin Bush, you know, and his comedy, you know, all this stuff that people are proposing is true. What do we do then? I mean, do we have any recourse? Is there a point to this? Because my thing is, while we're looking at this, you know, if this is the truth, then what about the next thing that's in the works?
That's when it gets all too scary. I think.
So what do we do? I mean, what's the recourse?
Well, I mean, this all ties into, again, we've said that the case for going into Iraq was bogus, WMD, all that stuff, the conflation of Afghanistan's attack supposedly on America. Now, I can't say that, say, you know, Bush and his brother and all these people were actually directly involved. But you have to look at the connections of the Carlyle Group, Bush's dad and others, to the Bin Laden family right before 9/11. And you're looking at a very, very small group of people who have a direct stranglehold on a whole lot of the wealth and that military-industrial complex that unfortunately has been the recipient of most of our tax dollars in most of our lifetime. So, that you have oil interests, all this kind of thing that...
Yeah.
I keep thinking about this film that I saw this weekend.
Okay, and I know what you're talking about. I guess I still want to like bring this back to
what
real actions can we take at this point regarding this? And I understand that part of this, you know, our job is to bring information to the fore. That's our job, is, you know, being on Fourth Estate Radio. But I also want to put forth the idea, perhaps,
that, or ask you, I mean, you know, since this is kind of like, you know, that you're bringing the information out,
mm-hmm.
what is it that, what can we do, John? I mean, because the one thing that I don't know if anyone else is feeling this way, but I, you know, hearing all this, I'm feeling a little bit helpless here.
Well,
I'm feeling like, well, you know, all this happened 5 years ago, and what are we going to do with this information to create a new reality at this point? Would you see that as a goal?
Well, yeah, and okay, so let's just step out just for a second. Step out of the conversation that we've been having, right? And we can go back to
okay.
a lot of conversations that you and I have had in the past with, you know, on air, off air, you know, with all people that we know. We have talked about a whole lot of things, and one of the biggest connecting points is about the control aspect of fear. Okay?
Okay.
And also the other big thing is
You mean using terror and creating, well, I mean, there's documented evidence that the Bush administration used the terror alerts as a way to create a certain reaction in the public. So, I mean, that's documented evidence right there.
And
there's no conspiracy theory about that. That's true.
The public finally caught on, and the polling showed that the terror alert were having no effect, like a switch. You've never heard another terror alert.
Yes, isn't that interesting?
Okay, so this plays into the propaganda game. Okay, now we also talked about constantly another conversation where comes down into the what the hell do we do about it category is the problems with our electoral system. Okay, so again, it's a control and power issue. Now, those two things are used to keep us from having the real conversation and being able to force the real investigation. And I do believe that as the right wing is imploding at the moment because all of Bush's falsehoods and his just general stupidity are becoming common knowledge.
Is that the chairman of the new Joint Chiefs of Staff? Is that general stupidity? Sorry, John, I couldn't help it. but I want to ask this. Actually, that's Rumsfeld's nickname, by the way. General stupidity.
Rummy's favorite advisor in the White House.
Okay. I see where you're going with this. Let me get back in here for a second.
Right.
I do think that you're making a great point. And the point is that there's enough of a doubt out there that there needs to be a significant action taken to eliminate some of these doubts. Now, how can we do that? There are a number of states who have created clean election laws, North Carolina being one of them.
Yep.
There are several others who have created voter verified balloting and voter confidence acts. There are any number of progressive candidates that have been polling fantastically well nationwide in districts that have been primarily Republican and conservative in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it looks like that the process is self-correcting, that the Democratic process is coming around and perhaps maybe a power larger than those that would like to fix the elections.
Okay.
And let's say we get a Democrat. I'm just going to go out here on a limb. We've been talking about, well, we've been out on several limbs tonight, but I'm going to go out on a limb. Let's hope this one will support me. Now, I am in California tonight. This is great being in California, by the way. I just want to say that.
Okay.
I have several stories, but we'll get to those later. Let's go out on a limb. Let's say we elect a Democratic Congress. The chairman of the House Judiciary Committee is John Conyers. If John Conyers gets a hold of this information, and I believe he has and is a supporter of the 9/11 situation, or at least the idea that there's more there than meets the eye, do you think he may enact some truth commissions to try to figure out exactly what happened? And if so, what do you think he can do with that? And I want to put that question out there. you know, perhaps someone who might have more information about the, about this than just us can call up and say what the process might be to create this.
Everything you said there is everything that I want to see happen. Okay. Now, I'm not avoiding. I just think I need to do this to clarify a couple of things. Everything that you just laid out, I want. Right? And Conyers, as far as I'm concerned, he's a man to do this. And he has history along these lines. Now, I think we still have a problem, which is that I still think that there's a huge portion of the Democrats that are Republicans in Dem clothing. Okay, we still have issues of the DLC and whatnot, and you know they're not coming in on anything about looking into anything any further. And I think that one of the issues that we need to deal with, aside from just getting people in, getting Democrats control of the Congress, is that we need to have real Democrats. And I think that we're starting to see the real ones from the fake ones, like we saw in or we heard on radio this week, which we may get to a little later. I'm not sure if I want to stoke that fire.
That dastardly, waskowy wabbit.
I don't know how much more fire stoking I want to do there. I think we may have made enough of a noise to have a few people reconsider some of the things that they're doing, and I'm wanting to hold out. But anyway, to get back to it, we're gonna run out of time, and I'll probably have to answer your question after we come back. But if we can see, it's all about context. We've talked about this, and you know I'll pick this up after the break, Bruce. You wanted to take us out. You have something to say.
Yep. John, and the other thing, too, that I wanted to throw in there before we go over to the break is just that I do value very strongly your ideas and your opinions in this, as I do everyone who expresses their ideas and their opinions. And don't let anyone throw you down and dismiss what you have to say just by saying the two words conspiracy theorist. Time and life has proven that there have been untold numbers of conspiracies throughout the ages of history. So for us to feel disenfranchised just because someone says that, I mean, we need to take back the language in that area. This is Bruce Birch. That's John Fox. You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio. Want to get on the program? Do so. 1-877-443-2366 is our number. We'll be right back.
Hey, have you got a minute?
Huh?
I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The man ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha!
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree, and I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and when we do, it can be very hard for us to talk about it and get support, because nobody expects a man to have breast cancer. But I know one place to get reliable, timely information about breast cancer. Breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet that translates all those big medical words your doctor uses into plain English. It helps you understand what kind of cancer you have and what treatments are out there. It helps you get your head together and make a list of questions for your next doctor's visit. And it gives you all kinds of other good information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Lottie in the chat room has fixed himself some stuffed pork chops with apple raisin walnut chuck.
You, me, Grace, Rama.
Mango chuckney.
Hey, speaking of that,
it's all you need.
Mustard seed?
Mustard seed, yeah. That article.
It's not the same as mustard gas.
Well, it's pretty close. Mustard gas.
Join
mustard
Grace gas. And Rama, homebodies, Sunday evenings, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network. It's food for thought.
Woke up this morning, I suddenly realized we're all in this together. I started smiling, 'cause you were smiling, and we're all in this together. I'm made of atoms, you're made of atoms, and we're all
right, everybody.
All in this together.
Oh, you jumped the gun on me, John. This is for the state radio. My pal John is there. I'm here. We're all here because we're all in this together. And you know, when I went out to the break, I was talking a little bit about taking back the language and trying to create a new paradigm for some of the things that, you know, too long have we allowed the Rush Limbaughs and the Sean Insanities and the, you know, the other ones who are spouting the hate on the right side of the spectrum. Too long have we allowed them to set the terms for what we believe is truth. We've got to take back that language. We're not wackos, John.
Not last time I checked. I mean, some people have tried to tell me that, but, you know, they were usually boring. So,
maybe you're a wacko, but I'm not a wacko. No, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, you know, we hear this left-wing wackos, and you know what the reality is, John? Every left-wing wacko I ever met, you know, they go to crochets, they play bridge and stuff, man. They, you know, these people, you know, they play poker for, you know, 25 cents, you know, raises.
Well, you know, you use my favorite line, taking control of the language again, you know, and we've said this countless times since we've been doing this show. You know, that the dialogue had been lost, and we were told to not have the dialogue. And, you know, it's the whole point behind, you know, the Head On Radio Network is, you know, conversation radio, because we're not going to get anywhere unless we talk about it. You know, everybody can have their individual ideas, be running around screaming bloody murder about their own thing, and everybody could be 25% right. And we're not going to get anywhere until we get everybody talking about what they know and what they understand, so that we come to a greater understanding of where we stand in this world, because, you know, we haven't even gotten into any stories, you know, individually today, and I really don't care if we do, because I kind of think...
Well, I do want to get into one in particular.
Oh, okay, that's fine, but can I answer your question that you asked me before?
Okay.
Okay.
Sure.
We get past the next election, right? We're past 2006. We have either fixed the electoral system enough to get enough of the people's voice counted properly to get the representatives in, or the swell is so huge that even the gerrymandering can't push the results far enough over. To, you know, it just has to be over the top, like what's happened in Italy over the last couple of days. Now, we get there, and we get someone like Conyers, together with someone like Kennedy, together with who's our boy heading up the censor thing.
Russ Feingold,
right? We get Barbara Boxer, who I happen to really like very much. Recently, there's been a couple of things I've had a couple issues with, but I wait and watch. But I think we need to actually have an investigation where we're able to look into the Saudis, considering that 17 of the 19 hijackers came out of Saudi Arabia, or 15 or whatever it was. You know, there's so many unanswered questions, and what we need is a real investigation process where we have records opened up.
Well, you know, John, not to interrupt you, but, you know, Henry Waxman here of California, where I am right now, Henry Waxman, his representative, has been following the money down the rabbit hole.
This is what we need to do, yes, always follow the money.
And you know, I mean, there are those that have been doing the investigative work sort of in the background and have been using the GAO as a way to document, see, because they can't document stuff in committee right now because they don't have controls of the committee.
Right.
So they can't even present evidence that the majority doesn't want to hear. I mean, it is that corrupt and it's that sick. But what they can do is they can gather the evidence and present it to the GAO, the General Accounting Office, and say, what do you think about this? The GAO then writes a report and says, yep, this is bad, bad, bad. Okay, so then they have that documented. Now, they can't do anything with it at this point, but, you know, if at some point the House changes control, then, you know, some of these things can, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens if that does. My hope, as is yours, as is most folks who are listening to this program, is that, you know, the day that that does happen, folks do, there in the Congress, do finally get a spine and do something about it.
there's my big question, Bruce. And see, I have no doubt about the people at this point, right? The people of the United States and the rest of the world who was there, you know, far quicker than the majority of citizens of the U.S. You know, we gotta look at this whole thing again, and we need to get real representatives in, and we need to weed out. I really think we have people working against our best interests, trying to right-wing swing continually the Democrats, and I think that's a problem, you know. And you know, it's just it's we have too many unanswered questions. Sorry, I was paying attention to. I was distracted with something in the production chat. We need to get these people in. So we need to focus on making sure that we get our voice heard to get the representatives in, so we can actually have the discussions and, like you say, get control of the committees.
Yes, that's one path, and we need to go down that. I do believe I hear some music, so guys. We'll be right back. Please do give us a call, 1-877-443-2366. This is the number. This is Fourth Estate Radio. We will be right back.
One of the many things people expect schools to do these days is inspire students to be creative. Hello, I'm Richard Thompson. Educators and psychologists agree. They say that helping young minds tap their creativity is just as important as mastering math and English skills. And of course, all parents love to experience the joy of seeing and hearing something their child has created. Well, one of the best places creativity is actively encouraged is in music class. Kids working out a phrase in a choir part, learning technical stuff like fingerings on an instrument, or even composing and arranging music on computers. Music classrooms are bursting with creative energy, just waiting to be explored by young minds. Don't let it go to waste. Please support your school music program.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Guitar, Baldwin Piano, and this station. Music, part of a sound education.
Hello, I'm Martin Sheen. When I was growing up in Dayton, Ohio, I had an unforgettable mentor who believed in me and encouraged me to pursue my dreams. Today, there are millions of children across this country waiting for a mentor to help them. Improving the world starts with one child. Please, become a volunteer mentor for Mentoring USA. Give children the chance to develop and flourish and share in the future that belongs to them.
parents. Did you know that high school dropouts make 42% less than graduates? Someone will have to make up that difference, and chances are, that will be you. That means paying 42% of their groceries.
Ooh, more candy.
42% of their dentist bills.
No, no more candy.
Even 42% of their therapy sessions.
It's all my dad's fault.
Save your money. Encourage your kids to stay in school. For help and advice, call 877-FORAKID. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Well, we're all in this together.
In Sydney, Australia, and Bruce Birch is up in California this week. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, buddy.
This has been...
How do they say hey in California? Hang on, let me ask my sister. How do they say hey in California?
Hey.
Say what now? Hey. Hey, John.
Hey, is that your sister?
That's my sister. She declined earlier to want to get on the radio. Maybe she will tomorrow. I'm at my sister's pad, and this is the podcasting pad here in rainy California. How many weeks has it been raining now? 4 weeks straight.
Jeez.
More like 4 months, she says. And actually, I'm thinking that actually, it's getting bad when you're riding up a hill and you see a guy building an ark next door. It's pretty bad.
Hey, Noah, what are you doing? Building an
Noah,
ark?
Noah, what are you doing over there?
What's an ark?
For you.
You're just making me think of Bill Cosby. What's an ark? I'll give you a hint. How long can you tread water? Ha, 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 ha. Sorry. I had those albums from when I was about five.
that was pretty interesting. John, I wanted to, want to talk to you about what's going on in Iran, because I think that's, we've been talking about the whole 9/11 thing tonight, and I don't want us to get so caught up in that tonight, because we have all kinds of time to talk about 9/11 and what happened that day. Mm-hmm. I also think we need to talk about what's about to happen.
Yes,
because we have over the last we have been the cutting edge news source for the Iraq situation. We've been the ones who've been breaking the news. We were talking about that Bush was going to invade Iran. When did we start talking about December?
Well, yeah, we seem to be following more nose to the grindstone on Mr. Seymour Hersh. A little bit ahead of some of the curve, as far as it looked to me. I don't want to go patting our own back too much, because, I mean, we are all in this together about getting to this. But it's undeniable the accuracy rates of what this man writes. And he's right a whole lot more than he's wrong. And I reckon it's a good, 80 to 20% thing when it comes to his scorecard, if you ask me.
Well, I got an interesting story about the whole Iran situation, and I wanted to share this with you because I think the people in the United States need to hear more about what the people in Iran are thinking. Not the leaders, because, we have some bat crap crazy leaders right now. You know what I'm saying? And so do they. All right? I don't know that there's much of a difference between President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. I botched the shit out of that. On Friday, Iran's president attacked the Zionist regime in Israel for harming the dignity of Islamic nations and declared that it was heading toward annihilation. But ordinary Iranians, quoted in both articles, questioned the president's hardline tactics, and along with fearing a United States invasion, are also angered about the country's economy. Ahmadinejad has forgotten why he won the presidential vote, one student told the Associated Press. The needy voted for him because he promised to bring bread to people's homes, but nothing good has been done to improve living standards. Now, does that sound familiar?
Sounds very familiar, man.
This is, that could have been a quote from, New Orleans?
Well, it sounds like the same kind of scare tactic, too, and whole, completely hollow promises. It sounds like they've got as much an idealistic fundamentalist maniac as we do.
Well, and so, and here, and therein lies the problem. We have two. What was the name of that rooster in Bugs Bunny?
Foghorn Leghorn.
We have two Foghorn Leghorns strutting a boat, running these countries. You know what I'm saying? Puffing out their chests and saying, "Now here, look here, boy. This
look
is the
here,
way
it's going."
And Cheney's the chicken hawk. You know?
I'm the chicken hawk, and I eat chickens.
Oh my gosh!
Hey man,
this is welcome to Fourth the State Radio. but this is the truth. Now I'm reading this story, and you know, well, yeah, we got a little bit of comedy with it. But the reality is that it doesn't seem to be any appreciable difference between what they're saying about their leader and what we're saying about our leader. So the only difference is that we have free and independent press. But we do have a free press. It's not necessarily that independent. And actually in Iran, I don't believe they have the same kind of freedom when it comes to their press there. So that may be part of what may be fueling any disdain toward the United States. I do want to say this though, and that is that we have a responsibility, I believe, to try to find, and I think that's what I may take on as my task over the next couple of weeks, is try to dig up some folks who are in Iran or who are from Iran to get their perspective on what they think about the United States.
Right.
Because I bet you that if we take a really good solid look, that there probably isn't going to be that much of a difference.
And one thing that we have to remember.
I bet you those people have dreams and hopes and fears, and they want to raise their family and get an education and do all the stuff that we want to do, too. I bet there's not one bit of difference.
I doubt there is any difference. But the one thing that we have to remember as we talk about this whole Iran thing, we have to remember that Iran has been coming to the United States with handouts saying, we know you have problems with what we're doing with terrorists. Let's sit down and talk. And Bush, Cheney, and the cabal gave them talk to the hand. And so where do we end up? They end up electing a fundamentalist nut job when they actually, just not long ago, I remember when Clinton, not my favorite bloke either, was in office, Iran had one of the most progressive governments in the Middle East. And they were actually the hallmark for a new Middle Eastern standard of democracy.
Let's look at that for a minute, John. The man campaigned on he's a hardline right guy. Hard right line guy. Okay? Campaigned on a platform of social services. Where have we heard that before? Compassionate conservatism.
You only need to say compassionate conservatism because conservatism is not compassionate.
Well, and now look at what just happened in Canada. Okay, what's his name up there? He escapes my name now. But the new prime minister campaigned on a platform of social services and is a conservative.
But they never follow through on this.
Well, you and I know this. But what I'm thinking is that there's a connection. I can't help but think that there's a connection in this.
And that's why I think what's happened to Berlusconi is so important. Here's a guy who owned the three major networks in the country, the largest national newspaper, the largest book publisher in the country, and he's been outed by a significant margin, and he's calling voter fraud.
Berlusconi would call voter fraud. I mean, oh my gosh, this guy's
Okay, so, and I think he's the first of.
I think Berlusconi's like the Liberace of the world leaders. What do you think?
Well, yeah, and if you go on the idea that, you know, these high corporatist types are like a mafia, you know, where they're made men, I'm looking as far as in the global scheme of things, this guy is the first of the made guys who bought their way in. Through just the power of money and influence, have fallen. And, you know, I mean, it was his own media. And he's claiming that they had a bias against him. And he owns the stations. So, you know, if that's how world opinion is starting to shift on these conservative leaders, this is where I think, yeah, we are ripe for change in America and everywhere else. However, there's some pretty scary strangleholds on the military-industrial complex, which I think are keeping the American people, for one, still a bit at bay.
We have a national debt of $8.1 trillion. The military-industrial complex cannot withstand that for very long.
It can't withstand it now. It's running on a vapor. It's running on Chinese and Saudi investment.
Ha, 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 America.
Hey, man, like, that thing has come back to haunt me in my dreams.
If you don't know what we're talking about, last year at the Sundance Film Festival, there was a 17-minute short movie called Ha, 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 America. And it was a purposefully badly translated movie that basically said, yes, America, while you're fighting this war on terror, we are basically, we are, you know, owning you. We are giving you all the money. You are in debt to us. If we decide to call in the money, you will sink like a rock. And you know what? They're right.
And there's another aspect to that, of the film, that really is what hit me really hard, is they really strongly go and attack our own spin on ourselves about being so big. When they talk about, you know, New York City wouldn't even rank in the top 10 as far as Chinese cities. Okay, so we, you know, we really, really do overblow ourselves, and that kind of over machismo American bloody thing that we all carried and all believed for so long is coming back to haunt us, I think, in a lot of ways, because I think sometimes it was only we were so strong and so big by virtue of our own hot air.
I think that, but you know, we have to watch this. We have to watch this.
Okay.
This whole situation with Iran. You know, we've been, you know, the what I'm hearing now, and this is several little birdies that have been emailing me and letting me know little cutting edge stuff. What I'm hearing now is that they're looking at a date at the end of June. Have you heard this?
Yeah, I heard something about that, and I heard
I'm sorry, end of May.
No.
Really? Well, okay. I'm sorry. I meant beginning of June, not end of June.
Right. Okay.
And then I turned around and saw a story that basically said that there were already operations going on within Iran right now to destabilize the government, gather information, be subversive. A terrorist group called the MEK is already operating within Iran, being paid by us.
You covered that yesterday, didn't you?
Yeah, I covered that in the news yesterday. It's really scary stuff. And I guess, you know, the bottom line is that if we go into Iran, we're going to be there for a long time. And there will not be appreciable. Look at what. Okay. How long did it take us to reach Baghdad? A month. It's going to, you know.
Mate, Iran's huge. It's enormous. And they don't have a completely knocked-off military from a war just, you know, less than two decades before. You know, or, you know, they're not decimated in the same way. They're trying, but it's not going to be what Iraq was. But, again, we're playing the same lead by, you know, these subversive operations going on where we're working on the inside to try them on. It was like the flights that we ran over Baghdad in one of the UN-colored painted planes, hoping that Saddam would, you know,
hoping he would shoot down these planes, right? They were going to send some dummy planes over.
So, you know, I mean, this again, we again use the juxtaposition of comedy to say it. And we've said we've seen this episode of the Brady Bunch before. Marsha, 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 I shouldn't play ball in the house. We're seeing it again, man. And I think because the tables are starting to turn as far as public opinion, this is the first time that, and especially because it's Iran, who is not going to just fall easily, where this time I really, really think we could very possibly be in trouble. And they're saying that Bush thinks that this is going to be the thing that's going to save his presidency, which is absolutely insane. That scares the bejesus out of me, Bruce.
Yes. I totally agree. I totally agree.
I'm living in is selling uranium to China, selling uranium to Pakistan and India, or working on deals to do said, Taiwan as well. And I mean, what are we setting up here, man? I mean, I'm just absolutely blown away. And you know, we're about to go into a break, and we're going to come back, and I believe we're going to do your Occupation Watch segment. And if we're still doing this show in a year, if the planet actually still has functioning human beings, what is that segment going to be like next year?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's going to be what it is. I guess, you know, we got to look at another.
Are you going to be talking about tens of thousands?
Possibly. I mean, there's the civil war is broken out there, man. Ethnic cleansing has begun in Iraq. It has gotten to the point where the Sunnis and the Shias are so dead set on killing each other at this point, and we're doing nothing to stand in the way and say this is absolutely not okay. You know, but we'll talk about that after the break. What is the benchmark for success at this point?
There is no succeeding in Iraq. There is only...
So, and you know what? The reality is we're saying this is all doom and gloom. You know what? War is doom and gloom. And if there were an easy way out of Iraq, I would say... Well, actually, there is an easy way. It's called put the guys in planes and fly them the hell out of there. And then give Iraq war reparations and let them rebuild their country. But, you know, that's the easy way out. As it stands, there is no way out that the president has outlined. I mean, you know, he has already said they're going to be there forever. We're listening to Fourth Estate Radio. That's John Fox. We'll be right back with Occupation Watch.
Lots of people talk about the ways that schools should inspire students to be creative. I'm Mary Chapin Carpenter. Business and education leaders say that young workers too often lack the creativity needed to remain flexible and excel on the job. Well, helping young minds tap their creativity is just as important as mastering math and English skills. When you look at today's educational landscape, one of the best places that creativity is actively encouraged is in music class. Music classrooms today are like deep wells of creative energy just waiting to be explored by young minds. Don't let it go to waste.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Guitar, Baldwin Piano, and this station. March is Music in Our Schools Month. Music, part of a sound education.
What's it like?
What's it like?
It's lonely.
It's really lonely.
I miss my brother.
I miss my brother.
I'm surrounded by other people, but it's not the same.
I've got other people around me, but it's not the same.
It's pretty scary, but I don't let it rattle
me. Pretty scary, Ryan, but I don't let it rattle me.
You always have to watch your back.
There's no one to watch my back.
I spend my whole day worried who's out to get
me. I'm always wondering who's out to get me.
But I can take care of myself.
But I can take care of myself.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
It's not like I have a choice.
It's not like I have a choice.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
Go to jail for a gun crime and your family serves a sentence with you. Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Hi, my name is Aaron and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. This is from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote, and then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored, hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. And when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of mannequinism, and that my only hope was to get involved. Even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight mannequinism.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
And I reckon that little schmuck's almost going to be leaving the building soon, Bruce. And I believe it's time for the Occupation Watch.
Quack, quack. Quack, quack. Quack, quack, quack.
Malloy played it. Quack, quack. It was nice to hear it again on Air America.
That was my Scotty McClellan impersonation. Quack, quack.
Quack, quack.
Quack, quack. Okay, we're going to go into the Occupation Watch. The first, I'm sounding like I'm in the bottom of a barrel somewhere.
Nice, sound fine.
I wanted to talk about the, obviously we always cover the human cost of the occupation of Iraq, and so far this week there have been 2,369 American soldiers who have died there. Of the it was about 94% have died since Bush uttered his mission accomplished speech. 94% have died since he declared the war to be over. That's 2,232. I broke a number last week that basically said that there may have been as many as 250,000 Iraqis that have been killed since we took over the occupation of their country. That seems to be growing exponentially, and there's a reason for that, and I want to talk about that this week. Violence in Iraq has hit unprecedented levels, with government officials reporting signs of growing ethnic cleansing between Shiites and Sunnis. The fairground in Al-Quds, south of Baghdad, for example, is filled with former residents of the capital now living in tents. 65,000 people over the last 2 weeks have been forced from their homes because of the civil war that's going on.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to ask. How is this not a civil war? I mean, how can they possibly still attest that this is not a civil war?
You know, and those folks, and this is a spokesman for the they have a Ministry of Displacement and Migration. Now, let me ask you a question. If a country is being peaceful, and there's nothing, everything's going pretty good. Do they have a Ministry of Displacement and Migration?
No.
Well, obviously there was a need for one, wasn't there?
Well, yeah, not on the scale that you're speaking of. You know, I mean, I can see in some normal you know, being part of just your regular immigration, but I wouldn't think it's all just nonsense.
And apparently, according to the UPI, which I think it's kind of interesting that the UPI broke the story, the makeshift refugee camps are now common to Sunni and Shiite alike, especially in southern Iraq. You know, I reckon, John, that what we've got is a situation that is exponentially getting worse. And here, you know, so we have a president that has invaded one country, and then immediately treated it like the red-headed stepchild, invaded another country, and now is treating it like the red-headed stepchild, and has his sights set on invading yet another country. Now let's look at this for a second. If we judge people on their past behaviors, and we judge people on their past accomplishments, I can't help but say that this doesn't bode well.
No, it doesn't. It's not looking good at all. And to go back to not the most recent article from Mr. Seymour Hersh, but the previous one that you and I have spent plenty of time on, he spoke about the way to cover the existence of the Civil War was to slowly back off the ground troops and increase the air campaign, and it ends up becoming harder to cover, and probably preparing to move those ground forces into Iran. And this is all playing to it, months down the road. And yeah, it doesn't bode well at all, because we have been down this road before. We have looked back at the road traveled and seen that there were a whole lot of other places to go except for where we went, but everybody was ready for full steam ahead, straight into an unjustified conflict where thousands have died. And it does my head in when you say 250,000 Iraqis, man.
Well, you know, we read accounts in the newspaper daily, 60 killed, 40 killed, mosques being bombed, left and right. I mean, this is not like a once a week 40 people get killed. This is daily.
Yeah. And how much of this is being instigated by the supposed...
Let's not even look at. And I don't want to do this. I hate to cut you off there, John.
Right.
But I don't. Let's not even look at the instigation. The bottom line is that this is a country that we invaded 3 years ago and should have secured by now, if that is indeed the mission. And you know what? It's nowhere near being secured. It wasn't when he declared victory. You know, we broke it, we own it, and we have to. Well, the bottom line is that Rumsfeld has to go. Cheney has to go.
Yeah, that chorus is. The anti-Rummy chorus has grown greatly over the last couple of weeks. We got a lot of generals coming out and asking for his head in a big way.
Yeah, we do. And Mr. Bush said today that was not going to happen. He said he will stand by his man. Thank you, Patsy.
I can't figure out which one's more hollow and evil, Cheney or Rummy. You know, I really, really can't.
Well, that's definitely a known. That's definitely a known unknown.
but the known is that the two of them are probably two of the most evil characters that walk this little blue marble. Which,
well, there is some reason why Rumsfeld's still in power there, the Defense Department. Anyone else would have been gone a long time ago. You know, there is some reason why he's there. And, you know,
he's part of the cabal that wanted all this. You know, you said about, you know, the mission. What if they are successfully completing the mission that they actually want that they're not telling us about? Anyway, that's the music, and it's break time. We've got news, and then we come back with an interview, a music interview. Bruce beat me to it, so stick around after the news. Be back on Fourth Estate Radio.
And on Radio News, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's a war of words right now, but one never knows where it will end. Saturday, former Israeli Prime Minister Shimon Peres said Iran's president is, quote, of Satan, not God. Peres was responding to equally hateful remarks from Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who called Israel, quote, a dying tree. More ominously, Peres also said that Ahmadinejad will end up like Saddam Hussein. Another U.S. Marine died in George Bush's war against Iraq on Saturday. The U.S. Marine died in what the Pentagon termed a motor vehicle accident. He was part of the Marines' first logistic group. The death was not the result of enemy action. Also in Baghdad Saturday, four other human beings died in the burgeoning civil war that plagues the city's streets. 18 more people were wounded in the car bomb attack on Baghdad's Palestine Street. George Bush's death toll also leaped in Afghanistan. Afghan sources said Saturday that 41 Taliban fighters were killed, as well as six members of the Afghan police, in a shootout in Kandahar province on Friday. A former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff ran to the defense of his former boss on Saturday, retired General Richard Myers. Himself partially responsible for the mess in Iraq, said Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld is doing a good job. Myers said members of the military should never criticize Rumsfeld. Last week, a group of retired generals and admirals called for Rumsfeld to resign, contending that his incompetence is getting more and more Americans killed. And speaking of retired military men, Pope Benedict XVI, a former Nazi anti-aircraft gunner, began his first Easter celebration Saturday in Rome. He preached a homily that had something to do with grabbing Jesus. At the start of the service, Benedict carved the first and last letters of the Greek alphabet onto a candle, as well as the numbers for 2006. As if there were any questions about the Bush administration's commitment to citizens along the Gulf Coast, some of them were answered last week. The federal government announced it may not spend the money needed to raise all the levees protecting low-lying areas in the Gulf Coast region. The decision may make it impossible for residents to obtain insurance coverage. Meanwhile, the United States isn't in bad enough financial shape to satisfy George Bush. Saturday, he called for Congress to make his economy-crippling tax cuts for the wealthy permanent. In his weekly radio address, Bush reported the line about how the tax cuts create jobs. He also said that letting the tax cuts expire as they were designed to do amounts to raising taxes. Bush is the first president in history to try to wage offensive war and cut taxes at the same time. This is News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Hey, I'm Bonnie Raitt. Remember how excited you were as a kid to go back to school at the end of the summer? Seeing old friends, making new ones, getting new books in a new locker, a clean slate. And music class, that special room where you went to sing and perform with your friends and learn all sorts of interesting stuff about great composers and instruments and different kinds of music. We remember our music teachers because they were so passionate about helping us learn to love music. They help spark a love for listening to notes and voices and rhythms that continues to enrich our lives even today. Know what? I bet your kids feel the same way about music class. Ask them and make sure they get involved with music in school this year.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
Trial opens on the day after Easter for a Catholic priest accused of murdering a nun. Father Gerald Robinson is accused of stabbing Sister Mary Paul 72 times, as well as strangling her. At the time of the murder in 1980, she was 71 years old. The murder took place in a hospital chapel in Toledo. Prosecutors say Robinson performed some sort of ceremony or ritual along with the murder. Nepalese police continued their anti-democracy crackdown again Saturday. Security forces beat journalists with batons. The journalists were protesting the Nepalese monarch's crackdown on free speech, ending an 18-year experiment in democracy last year. Journalists and working people are calling for a general strike to demand the removal of the king. That prompted the royal attacks on the Nepalese people. A Weather Channel crew was arrested in Warren County, Tennessee this past week. They had refused to leave the property of a woman who had been killed in the spate of killer twisters there. The crew was charged with trespassing. They claimed that they had been given permission to be on the property by the Warren County Sheriff, who says they're telling a big lie. And finally, will Hollywood bow to religious fundamentalists? Opus Dei, the bizarre Catholic sect portrayed in the film version of The Da Vinci Code, is demanding a disclaimer from Sony Pictures to run before the film. Opus Dei is upset about its portrayal in the film as a radical, homicidal sect with close ties to the Vatican. The group, whose membership includes Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, says the disclaimer would be respectful to Jesus. Sony has refused to respond to the fundamentalists' complaints so far. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bob Kincaid.
Back to Fourth Estate Radio. John Fox in Sydney here, and Bruce Birch over in California this week. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, mate. we were hoping to have Dave Rovics on at this point. We're having a little bit of difficulty getting him on the line, but we will we'll kill some time with some other things.
Because
there's plenty to talk about. You know, plenty to talk about. Stick around. Dave will be here shortly.
Well, I thought
I understand you went and saw an interesting movie this week.
Well, yeah, and in the last couple of years, Gail and I have tended not to go and see too much Hollywood fare as such and whatnot, but and I guess this might not qualify, but David Rovics is on the line. Why don't we go ahead and just take a quick left turn, and let's bring David on the line, Bruce.
Yeah, let me just do that. Okay, David Rovics has been called the musical voice of the progressive movement in the U.S. Amy Goodman has called him the musical version of Democracy Now. Since the mid-90s, Rovics has spent most of his time on the road playing hundreds of shows every year throughout North America, Europe, Latin America, and the Middle East. He and his songs have been featured on national radio programs in the U.S., Canada, Britain, Ireland, Italy, Sweden, Denmark, and elsewhere. And he has shared the stage regularly with leading intellectuals such as Noam Chomsky, Howard Zinn, and others. David Rovics, welcome to Fourth Estate Radio.
Thank you. I'm glad to be with you.
Glad you're with us tonight. I just wanted to, first of all, thanks for joining us. But I wanted to ask you, you know, very quickly, just what is it that brought you into doing music? I mean, I've read your bio, but I'd like to know, hear it straight from you. What brought you into doing the progressive music that you're doing tonight?
Well, it was a whole combination of different things, I guess. But I guess mainly growing up with progressive ideas around the house and getting exposed to progressive ideas through Ronald Reagan threatening to blow up the world and, being scared of that and finding out about, you know, the movement against nuclear weapons and nuclear energy, which was really happening in a big way when I was young. And so that was kind of the introduction of it for me. And I guess I write about it in my bio too, that there was a seminal event for me when was it? Well, it was May 1st, 1993. I guess I was like 25 years old or something. And a good friend of mine was shot to death when we went out in San Francisco, my housemate, Eric Mark, when we went out one night. And that sort of propelled me in the direction of writing better songs. But I guess I was already had a sort of political orientation around songwriting before that. Yeah.
This losing this friend, I mean, you know, was this in connection with the police at all, or?
No, actually, I mean, sort of in a weird way. I mean, actually, we were just going out on May Day to spray paint May Day slogans on a abandoned building in the Mission District in San Francisco, my friend Eric was kind of keeping an eye out along with another guy, for the cops, actually. But it turns out the cops weren't the issue in that particular instance. It was, there was a gang war going on between two, Mexican, gangs in San Francisco. And, the other person in our group who was with Eric was, a Latino guy who was not wearing either of the gang colors. And so this gang was suspicious of him, and they were pointing a shotgun at him, and then Eric, trying to intervene and de-escalate things, I guess, stepped in front of the shotgun, and then they pulled the trigger and blew his head off.
That's totally tragic. I mean, I can imagine, just the emotional upheaval that you would feel surrounding that. And I know also, you know, you were born around the same time period as I was born in 69. John, I think, is born in 69. You were born in 67. By the way, John Fox is on with us too, David.
Uh-huh.
Say hi, John.
G'day, David. It's great to have you on the show. I'm down in Sydney, Australia, but you couldn't tell with the wonders of technology.
I was wondering what the Sydney connection was. I'm actually on the road, incidentally, speaking of Australia, with a songwriter from Scotland named Alistair Hewlett, who you might have run into there as a member of the band Roaring Jack that you.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I have heard of the man, and I heard on your extensive touring past itinerary, you haven't actually been here yet, have you?
No, I've never been to Australia, but the next plan for me and Alistair to tour together is actually going to be in Australia in 2008. So we're in the midst of this tour from Boston to Minneapolis right now, and we'll be out there in a couple of years together.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. When you come down, and if I'm still here, and you need a sound guy, ring me up. I'd love to do it.
You bet. Great.
I love your stuff, man.
You never know what kind of connections happen on 4th Estate Radio.
You just never know, and I never knew that you, Bruce, were going to beat me to the first music interview on our show.
Well, you never know, John. David, I'm a go-getter when it comes to getting these interviews, man. But David, I also, I mentioned a couple minutes ago just about the time period that we all sort of grew up in the same time period, and that time period of the Ronald Reagan years. You know, I remember history books that basically put the 1960s on two or three paragraphs.
Yeah.
And totally downplayed any kind of progressive action, totally downplayed any kind of war movement that went on during the 1960s, and basically taught us, sit down, be good little children, do not, raise your voice, don't step out of line, don't, all these don'ts. But they did it in such a way it was like a lie of omission. Do you remember that, David?
Yeah, in history, growing up for me, they never got past World War II. It was like anything after World War II was just too complicated for them to take on or something. Or, I mean, it seemed like in the popular understanding, I mean, at that time in the 70s, of the recent history was that the government was was corrupt and led by imperialists that were bombing small Asian countries for no particularly good reason. And, I mean, that's, I think it, you know, they, yeah, it's just what, I don't know if they'd even worked it into the books. And this was a place that, this was a school that was, you know, using modern materials, but they just, avoided it somehow or other.
Yeah, David, I had a similar experience, and I remember, I think it was, as I was in a meeting with my guidance counselor going from sophomore to junior year, I asked, mm-hmm. why was there not anything really past the Roaring Twenties? I said, you know, why does modern history not get into Vietnam or any of this stuff? You know, everything that happened right around the time I was born, like, just didn't matter. And I got the excuse of, they said, it's too close in history to have context to teach in a school.
Oh, yeah, right. That's outrageous.
That was kind of the kind of non-response that I got, and I just sat there and looked at the guy, and you know, I was still too young and too naive myself, you know, growing up in a very right-wing household that I did. I just wrote it off. I had enough problems with going to work every day and trying to go to school as well. So you know, it's. I was always amazed that it seemed that, like, everything from World War II forward was a footnote.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
Dave, you know, and absolutely, you know, and I think that sort of has fueled a lot of us who grew up in that time period to get involved, I think, later. You have written a tremendous amount of music. How many songs have you written overall? Do you know how many?
I think... Well, I don't know altogether, but I think there's like 180 or something that I have on the web. So I guess that's about how many songs I've written that I'd care to, you know, mention. The other ones, you know, are best forgotten.
I can relate to that. I've got a few of those out there, too. There's a couple in particular, you know, and these are sort of like different songs from each other. And actually covered different time periods. And the first one I wanted to ask you about was the Battle of Blair Mountain. What was it? Now, the Battle of Blair Mountain, could you tell us a little bit about that song, what, you know, what it's about and what motivated you to write this?
Yeah, I was reading a history, that I found originally on somebody's, I don't remember where it was. I think I was somewhere in the southeast. I think I was in Athens, Ohio, which is actually this... in some people's minds, the southeast, because it's part of Appalachia. It's like the northeastern section of Appalachia. But I was, northwestern section. But anyway, I was in, forget it. Nobody needs a geography lesson here. I do, but anyway, I was in Athens and on somebody's coffee table was this book, called, Thunder in the Mountains. And it was, I just read the introduction. It was fantastic. And years later, I finally, you know, got a hold of a copy and actually read the book. And that was, a history of the Battle of Blair Mountain and the events that led up to it. And it was, I was just hanging out with Jeremy Brecker, a wonderful historian, author of a book called Strike and various other books, including a wonderful recent book on war crimes in Iraq. You know, people just didn't write labor history. I mean, it's a recent thing that people have tried to write labor history, and there's so much labor history that's just completely, lost, you know, utterly, completely. But, just to try to point out just how obscure such major events can be, when John Sayles was doing his movie Matewan, he was most of the way done with filming the movie before he even heard about the Battle of Blair Mountain, which was the culmination of the events that Matewan is about. And of course, if he had heard about it, it would have changed the movie completely. But essentially, in the course of the West Virginia coal mine wars of 1920-21, there was a pitched battle between 10,000 union miners and 10,000 scabs, lawyers, cops, anybody that they could get to defend the town of Mingo, which the miners were trying to sort of take over and free the prisoners that were being held without trial. who were being held for the crime of being union miners. And the battle went on for 3 days and nights. There were estimates of dozens killed. Nobody knows the number. Hundreds injured. They were firing at each other with machine guns, and the casualty rate wasn't higher than that because it was the height of summer and nobody could see anything. So they were just firing into the woods on either side, basically. And then eventually the army came in, and there was a general, a World War I general, who absolutely brilliantly handled the situation, for better or for worse. I mean, he completely de-escalated the conflict, basically, by not basically not punishing the miners at all and just saying, okay, boys, go home now, you know. Nobody came in there to escalate things and try to, you know, force a workers' revolution in West Virginia. They, you know, basically the miners went home and they lost the battle to the Union, but they won later in the 30s.
Well, you know, and I think that what is so disconcerting about listening to that story and hearing you sing the song and reading about that part of our history as a nation is that we have so readily given up on the unions, and when men fought, died, and shed their blood to organize.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we may be heading back toward that. I mean, you know, the just as a political aside, you know, the gap between those who have it and those who don't is getting wider and wider by the minute.
Absolutely.
You know, but I really appreciated that song because that was the first time I'd heard of that. I said, man, this is just, I mean, it astonished me to begin with. And I asked my friend Bob Kincaid, who also does a radio program on this network, and he told me all about the Battle of Blair Mountain. He lives there in West Virginia and is the son of a coal miner, you know. Mm-hmm. So he knows about the organizing stuff there. Other one that I wanted to talk to you about was after the Revolution.
Uh-huh.
Now, this song, yeah, it's a fantastic song. This song actually I play on my other radio program, All Things Reconsidered, as the closing of my show. And the reason why I do, David, is because it's so full of hope. What was your motivation for writing that tune, and where did, you know, where did it come from? Tell me about it.
Well, it kind of came originally out of a joke. Like, I was, it was just a lot of me and a lot of other friends of mine, and I'm sure a lot of people, you know, have a tendency of saying, well, you know, when somebody's complaining about something or other, whether it's something important or something relatively unimportant, you know, people will say, well, after the revolution, you know, we'll do this differently or that differently. And I just thought, well, how about writing a song about what we really would do differently after the revolution and making it maybe, you know, maybe kind of serious, you know, and so I came up with a sort of anthemic kind of, you know, like, let's, you know, we can win, and the world could be an entirely different, much nicer place if we did, you know. I like to write songs like that, because it's so important to hold on to that vision of how things could be absolutely so totally different than they are now in so many ways.
Absolutely. The other thing too, and actually I was going to hold it to two songs, but I'm going to slide one more in there. And that is, you know, one of the things that sort of motivated, and I'm just going to tell you this, David, because this is like one of those things that I need to tell you. One of the things that motivated me into doing radio, like we're doing radio right now, was listening to the song that you wrote about pirate radio.
Uh-huh. Wonderful.
Uh-huh.
Wonderful.
The FCC. Is that
so? It had just the desired,
you know, because
impact.
The reality is, you know, it yes, it did. It had just the desired impact. You know, primarily because we looked at when we started this radio program, we looked at, you know, the reality of the situation is that the real news never hits, you know, never gets out there, and it's only the packaged garbage that nobody, you know, it's like, look at the left hand, or excuse me, look at the right hand.
Yeah.
While the left hand is, you know, reaching around and stabbing you in the back.
mm-hmm.
And it, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't say anything. That was,
okay. Well, you know, and it just,
GPS
it's just
talking.
But it's highly disconcerting, and you know, we've been working hard to try to create a different paradigm, and that song definitely motivated us to try to drive this a little bit harder, to make it something that's going to be worthwhile listening to, and so that we make a mark as opposed to just sort of like being the same old that you hear everywhere else. And getting guys like you on the show also helps.
That's good. I hope so.
Well, and I'll tell you, mate, I'll go on musical tirades from time to time because I've worked in production most of my adult life, you know, touring guys like you around with their bands and making sure that your product gets off. And unfortunately, you know, one of the casualties of the media war has been real quality music and expression through music. Because, like you were saying, there was no one talking about the workers' struggle, but yet, if you go back, most folk music has always been about the worker struggle. And I'm really appreciative of guys like you who write some of the most wonderfully thought out lyrics that paint a place. I mean, after the revolution, you know, every week I hear that song at the end of Bruce's show and I feel a little bit better because I can see that place. And we need more people like you.
Yeah, and I think there's no shortage of people writing songs like this, and there never has been a shortage. It's just a matter of you know, how much control the music industry has over what gets on the airwaves. You know, it's the music industry that made this decision that writing songs about things that are supposedly the so-called political, about the things that are happening on the planet, you know, life on Earth and, you know, society, things that people deal with all the time, which people have always written about, you know. Mind disasters or struggles to change things or you name it, just anything, police brutality, conscription, poverty, you know, falling in love, falling out of love, the stuff that life is made of for most people on the planet. People have been writing about that forever. And the music industry came along and said, well, the only thing you can write about now is heterosexual relationships, and anything else is a political or a novelty song or something that you shouldn't be doing too much.
You're absolutely right. You know, and the music industry actually drove a lot of, or I shouldn't say the music industry, the music drove a lot of what happened in the 1960s. It's not doing that today. And I can't help but think that that's probably a big reason why the young folks are not as involved in the anti-war activities as folks your age, my age.
Yeah. But in the 60s, the industry was different, and they were playing people like me on the radio, and they don't do that now. There's probably just as many folks doing the stuff I'm doing as there were then. It's just that, you know, they don't play us on Clear Channel.
So you are on a tour right now. Where are you calling us from tonight?
From New York City. We just played a gig in New York City at the Theater for a New City. It was a benefit for the Starbucks Workers Union. Folks trying to form a union.
Cool. Right on.
Starbucks. Yeah. And we're heading west from here. We're heading towards State College, Pennsylvania, and Columbus, Toledo, Ohio, and Chicago, and Madison, Minneapolis. And
fantastic.
Yes, folks can find out more at davidrovics.com if they want to. Check that out.
I was about to ask you where they could find out about that. Now, you have 180 songs that people can actually download off of your website as well?
Yeah, and all my music is on the web for free download. Yeah, which is, partly a matter of principle, but also just a matter of practical. I think it's a good thing for musicians to do. Actually, it just increases your audience. It's a bad thing to do if you're a multimillionaire and you're getting lots of conventional advertising, then this is going to cut into your sales. But if you're anybody else in the bottom 99.9% of the musical spectrum, I'm pretty convinced myself that putting up lots of MP3s for free download, it just creates a buzz. It gets your stuff out there. People hear it on the internet who wouldn't hear it otherwise, and you build a bigger audience. It has yet to translate into bigger crowds at shows for me, so I'm not entirely convinced of my theory yet, but I'm pretty sure that it'll hold water.
Hey, man, you know, you get to know at least that you've gotten to move people, which I think is the whole point of why you've done it in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, there's been like over 600,000 downloads on the web of my songs, so, you know, clearly somebody's, you know, listening to the stuff. So it's clearly must be having some kind of impact out there on people.
We are, man.
Whoever
we are.
You are. And,
well, Dave, I'll tell you, I downloaded 180. No, but you know, I'm laughing just because, you know, but no, but I did. I went and I have a lot of your stuff, and I really appreciate you coming on our radio program tonight. And I certainly hope that I can get you back on in some other capacity in the future, man. Maybe we can do a live in studio thing or something.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, on the phone, in the studio, yep, anytime.
And I'd like to have you back on, and I'd like to talk to you about the state of the music industry and the actual art form sometime. I think that would be a great conversation.
Oh, definitely. I'd love to talk about it. And I'd also recommend a book by Matt Callahan called The Trouble with Music on AK Press, if people are interested in
Matt Callahan, The Trouble with Music. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, this was David Rovics. And, David, you can go and visit David's website, davidrovics.com. And that's R-O-V-I-C-S, davidrovics.com. Fantastic progressive musician. Dave, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Matty.
Hope to get back with you real soon.
There you go. And we're going to have a break. And you know what we're going to do on our break in honor of David Rovics? We're going to go ahead and play After the Revolution tonight on Fourth Estate Radio. My name is Bruce Birch. That's John Fox Down Under.
Hit it, Bob.
This is Fourth Estate Radio. We'll be right back.
It was a time I'll always remember. I could never forget how reality came down around us like some Western movie set. And when the dust all settled, the sun shone so bright, and a great calm took over us like it was all gonna be alright. That's how it felt to be alive after the revolution.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree, and I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and when we do, it can be very hard for us to talk about it and get support, because nobody expects a man to have breast cancer. But I know one place to get reliable, timely information about breast cancer. Breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the Internet that translates all those big medical words your doctor uses into plain English. It helps you understand what kind of cancer you have and what treatments are out there. It helps you get your head together and make a list of questions for your next doctor's visit. And it gives you all kinds of other good information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org. The first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to. A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of six U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a... Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Radio on Fox in Sydney, Australia, and that's a good song for what we did in the beginning of the show there, Bruce. You know, the little line there, I know the pieces fit. We tried to put a few of them together today, but what an interview, man. David was awesome.
David Rovics is a fantastic guy. I can't say that enough. I was actually on the break here talking to my co-producers this evening. And they were, you know, we were talking about it. Just it's quite remarkable when you hear someone tell a story and they can do it in a lyric craft. And you know, we have to honor that, man, because part of what is being lost in our society, I believe, part of what is being lost in our society as a result of the corporatist music takeover is that simple ability to tell a story using a song that everyone can relate to. And, you know, when we have those people that do that, we've got to honor them. We've got to help support them because they are carrying forward a message to another generation, you know.
Now, you're making me think about an interview that I read years ago with someone that we haven't heard much about in a long time, old Eddie Van Halen. And he said he was reading a book, and it was something, the title was something like Atop the Mountain. And he said that the one thing that stood with him from the book, and it stood with me from just a guitar magazine interview, was the question was, if music is your business, and it becomes a very, very big business, is music still your business?
Ask the question again, John.
If music is your business, and it becomes a very, very big business, is music still your business, or is the business of doing business your business?
Sounds like a known unknown.
Well, see, this is.
I know where you're going. I know where you're going with this.
And this is why David. This is why you know, David's doing it regardless of who is going to sign him. He's out there telling the story, like you said, you know, in a lyric that everybody can relate to. But it's not only that. Music has so much power, you know, poetry and all that kind of thing. So tell a story like, you know, this West Virginia story or something like that ends up making it, one, painting it in a picture that stays with you. And this is when, and so much context can be kept by the emotion within the music and the lyric. And I think the fact that we don't have this in the way that we have had it in other times, you know, by control, you got 5-6 companies controlling everything, and, you know, like down here, we got Sony. That's it. There ain't nothing else. So you're not going to have any choice, and they're going to put out who they can make the most money on.
Yeah.
I miss a David Geffen. Right, I've said this before. David Geffen, once one of his labels got big enough where he was no longer seeing bands in a club to go sign them, he'd sell the label and start a new one. Because he said many times, he says, I do this to go see bands. I don't do this to be the biggest record label in the world. And the second that the job keeps me from actually going and experiencing the music.
Well, you know, John, after the revolution, we can fix all that.
You bet, man. You bet. And I really think maybe we should I should look into maybe getting a couple of my Aussie music mates on, and I reckon a round table with David and talk about what's happened to the politics of music or the politics in music, you know? It's why, you know, from here, you hear me using a lot of the Screaming Jets and Ben Lee and things like that, because a lot of it, because it's so small over here, there's not all that much. I mean, there maybe have been a half a dozen Australian albums released this year that I would want to go get, because the people I actually like aren't releasing product.
Well, you know, the whole industry has moved toward the sex sells concept, and you know, if you can't, can you see the Battle of Blair Mountain with the Bump and Grind?
Oh, absolutely not, absolutely not. You know, there's that PSA that I usually use in my newscast that you directed me to, you know, and there's that one little bit in the soundscape where he says, you know, sounding more like everybody else, playing the songs that everybody else plays more than anybody else, you know, and it's all about this homogenizing, you know, and, you know, I don't want my music homogenized, you know, I want music to translate somebody's culture and their stories back to me. And this, you know, I think this can even be related to the attacks on native cultures.
Absolutely.
One of the things that they try and do is remove their music and their culture. And that's one of the ways of removing their history.
You know, when there were slaves being held here in the United States, the only way that they could find to express themselves without being whipped or beaten for their actions was to do so in a religious context. And that is where, like, for, well, you know, you hear all this the Negro spirituals that, you know, many of those same original songs came out of Africa and were actually folk songs from Africa. And the only way that they were able to do them, to be able to sing them and express them without being beaten was to do it in a Christian religious context. So, I mean, you know, this is nothing new. This has been going on hundreds of years.
And one thing that I want to throw into that whole mix is that they no longer had many of them, having come from Africa, their native instruments. And their native instruments had twice as many notes per octave than ours. So they had to find a way to recreate the sound of their scales within the constraints of the white man's tempered musical scale. And it's only because of those African slaves that we have the flat five that makes the blues scale. And that was the way that they were able to sneak in that quarter tone aspect of their scale and their culture that had been removed from them because they weren't allowed to even have the tools. All they had was their voices. And then they had to make the instruments that they had at their disposal when they were doing these in religious aspects or working on the chain gangs as well. You know, the slaves were allowed to sing as long as it was thought to be done for motivation, but they were doing it for communication as well.
Yeah, and you know what? That sounds like we should do a program on that sometime just to talk about some of those interesting things that that seem to fly under the radar, or should I say, you know, to the greatest majority of people are lost. But you know, yeah, music is a big deal, and that's something that we need to push harder, is to try to create that as a viable means of communication, not only as a way of expressing ourselves politically, but as a way of communicating to our youth, you know. David has a way of doing it. I think Black Eyed Peas, there's a band right there out of California that has been very successful financially,
yeah,
and has a strong anti-war, strong progressive message in a lot of their music.
And then you have guys like heroes of mine, like Steve Earle, who have never been afraid to be the human being that they are and never run away from a real fight either, you know? And Bob, our producer, and I were actually having a chat the other night about Steve, you know, talking about he's one of the best examples of someone who's really been human. And he still claims that he will, you know, he'll probably mess up before he ends this little game. But the stories that he has to tell and the fact that he gets that, you know, out of one of the few comes out and tells them on a consistent basis. I mean, his whole last record wasn't really even all that planned. The guys were touring down here in Australia and saw, and from a distance saw what was happening back home, and basically wrote the album, The Revolution Starts Now, within like a couple of weeks, once, as soon as they got home. Like, they felt like they had to exorcise a demon. And it's that kind of exorcism that I think garners a lot of time that kind of lyric and stance. And on this very subject, one of the stories that we never got to that I sent you in our page of links is that Neil Young has a song coming out, right? Get okay. This, man. Sung with, what is it? The song is called Impeach the President. There's a 100-member choir.
Oh, my God.
And people involved say it was a transcending experience. It should be out in 6 to 8 weeks.
Excellent. Who all sang with him? Was this like a bunch of famous musicians or what? What was the deal?
I have a link from Common Dreams, and I'll try and stick it up afterwards. And it says, apparently it was recorded with a 100-voice choir. Rumors have circulated in the past few days on the web, but ENP has tracked down the strongest confirmation in a blog kept by Sherman Oaks, California musician-singer Alicia Morgan. Previous reports quoted hints by Young and Jonathan Demme, who directed the new documentary Heart of Gold, that Neil was working on a hard-rocking political or anti-Bush CD.
Yeah, you know what? Now, man, there is hope. You know, there is hope, and there is hope, John. There's hope. There's hope.
Hey,
we're not going to hell in a handbasket.
Okay,
it's Easter basket.
On this theme, because we've got about 2 minutes before we go to the break, and Bob, if you want to get that little clip that I sent you handy, okay? Go on the positive. Even if you don't, if you're not into comic books, take your significant other, whatever, your dog, go see V for Vendetta. Now, I took a section of one of the trailers, some of the audio. Now, this takes place in England in the future. And it kind of lays out something very, it could be playing out a very bleak future that we're setting up for ourselves right now. So Bob, if you have that clip there, we can use this as a play out. It's about 2 minutes, and there's a couple of lines in here that you will have heard other places, I reckon, and particularly one about who should be fearing who. And regardless of anything, it's a great ride. You will feel better. And at the end of the movie, if you don't think new thoughts, you're going to blow me. It's outstanding. And they talk about the former United States that is in civil war. It's very, very interesting. Go ahead and run that clip, Bob. And we will see you on the other side of the break to wrap it up.
The truth is, there is something terribly wrong with this country.
Excuse me, miss.
I'm sorry.
No, you're not. But you will be.
The only verdict is vengeance. A vendetta.
I am not glad.
If our own government was responsible for the deaths of 100,000 people, would you really want to know?
You're getting back at them for what they did to you.
What was done to me was monstrous.
And they created a monster.
Fear became the ultimate tool of this government.
I want this country to realize that we stand on the edge of oblivion.
I want everyone to remember why they need us.
I wish I wasn't afraid all the time.
People should not be afraid of their government. Government should be afraid of their people.
It is you.
Several prominent party members have been murdered, Chief Inspector.
This is exactly what he wants.
What?
Chaos.
Beneath this mask, there's molten flesh. There is an idea, Mr. Creepy, and ideas are bulletproof.
Remember the 5th of November.
said she don't want me around. She said she's tired of watching me fall down. She wants a good life.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. I'm not sure exactly what went down there, if that clip went over, but all I can do is suggest that you see this movie. It's an interesting exercise in what could be, and it's a hell of a ride.
I'm going to go see it tomorrow, John. I haven't seen it yet. I'm going to go see it tomorrow, and I'm taking friends with me. And that's what I would like to recommend to anyone who's listening to this program. If you go, don't go alone. Take friends with you. Right? I mean,
Gail and I went and saw a matinee, and we were in amongst the theater filled up at the end. We were kind of surprised because it looked like it was going to be empty at first. We were the first to get there, but we wanted to, in this scene at the end, which I'm not even going to tell you anything about it. I wanted to, and Gail wanted to start to applaud.
You better not.
I won't, man. And it all ties into an actual event about the 5th of November that actually happened in English history. And
wait. You're giving away part of the story now. Stop.
Not a clip. Not anymore that was in the clip.
Well, I didn't hear the clip, though.
Oh, okay.
I turned it off, man. Actually, you know what? No, the reality is that, you know, no, it's cool, John. You can spoil the movie for me.
No,
let's go ahead. Go ahead. Really, really.
All I can tell you is it's 2.5 hours long, and it didn't feel anywhere near it. It's a great ride, and it's done by the people who did The Matrix. The production's really, really clean. It looks great. I wish they had turned the volume up where we were. but visually stunning and some really, really good script writing. I mean, it's just great story, great everything. We're getting close to the end of things here. We got about, 7 minutes, 8 minutes left or something here, Bruce. We went and opened up the 9/11 can, and, you know, and all we did was end up with more questions. But that's a good thing. See, it's all about this. It's all about this, having the discussion, you know, and we've talked about music and media, and it's just been another really, really stellar show as far as I can think of. And, I have hope, and I'm scared all the time, the ultimate quagmire. So my question is to you, what are you doing about it tomorrow night on All Things?
What am I going to do about it tomorrow night on All Things? Well, I'm going to tell you. I'm glad you asked, John. It's funny how you always ask me the same question about the same time every Saturday night.
Hey, man.
Maybe I should learn from that. All Things tomorrow night is going to be a live. It's always live, so that's not anything new. Let's see. Anything else? I'm in California.
Yeah.
I'm actually in. Is this Grass Valley? I am in Grass Valley, California, and John, that doesn't mean the kind of grass that you can smoke. However,
I didn't think you were in Humboldt County.
No, we're not in the Golden Triangle. we're the Green Triangle, whatever they want to call it. No, I'm in Grass Valley, California, which is right by Nevada City. Excuse me. I'll get there.
Oh, really? Is it Nevada?
Well, that's why I heard someone say Nevada City, so I said, okay, well, that's when in Rome, right?
no doubt. Now, you're not the only one that's roving this week. I heard word that our mate Bob Kincaid, our producer extraordinaire, is going to be doing some remote broadcasting for Head On this week.
Yeah, Bob Kincaid is going to be broadcasting from Alabama, and I think he is going to be wearing a bulletproof vest. pretty sure. Or maybe it's a Bible-proof vest. I'm not sure. I couldn't quite get it straight. I couldn't quite get it straight. But I know that he's going to be in Alabama, and God love him. I certainly hope that he comes back to West Virginia, wild, wonderful West Virginia, in one piece.
And so, what's it going to be like with Bob in Alabama and Agnes just all by her lonesome without Bob being able to just interrupt her flow. I think it's going to be very, very interesting. She could get up to some naughtiness, I think.
I think Agnes will do a fine job. I know
that.
I think she'll do a fine job, and I think bottom line is that we will get through this. This week will be interesting, though. It'll be interesting to see that, you know, one of the things that I wanted to do this week was try to get some perspectives from folks out here on various things, you know, stuff that's going on in the world, and I'm sure Bob will be doing a lot of that down in Alabama as well. But that's where we create this conversation. This is conversation radio. This is not talk radio. This is not, we don't give you a good talking to. We want to know what the hell you have to say.
You bet.
You know. So, you know, do stay tuned. Check out Bob this week. Come in tomorrow night. Check me out on All Things Reconsidered. You know, we've got to try to create a different kind of conversation in this country. The bottom line is that we've got to bring people together because they've been divided. They've been set apart. And
before you come on tomorrow, there's Grace and Rama, and I forgot to say that Joe Vecchio had another killer show on the network today, everything that I could catch while running around getting ready to do this. But you know, this whole thing with you over there in California and Bob getting ready to go on the road is a new step for the network. We're expanding our capabilities and testing the limits once again. So
one small step for man, one giant step for mankind.
One more step for independent liberal media. Damn it.
Progressive,
yes, because we're moving forward. That's the whole idea. We're, you know, tired of rolling back.
That's right. And we're not liberal like John Kerry either. I actually can walk upright without